Welcome to the More Than Fitness Podcast.
Sam Miller, it's been quite some time. How are you doing, bro?
Good. I appreciate you having me back, Matt.
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's been I don't know when we talked. Were we talking 2019?
Yeah, I think it was either summer or fall of 19.
Ah, pre-pandemic days, man. There we go. Me and Sam first met at a mentorship with John Romanello. We hit it off well. Had him on the podcast shortly after that, and then now you're all big time, dude. You're doing big things. You're working with some really cool people, and I reached out to you initially before we scheduled this, just telling you that I've really been enjoying your content. I've been really happy with not that you need my approval, but I've been really happy with the work that you've been putting out there just for the fitness industry as a whole. I feel like you're filling kind of that void, that role, really well. And yeah, thank you for caring what you do and putting that stuff out there. And I think you're also a good dude, so that helps too.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah. When you kind of slid in my DMs that day and you were also like, well, I'm also getting your ads all the time. I was like, you know, you never know like who's seeing what at what times. It's like the downside of omnipresence. It's like as a business owner, you want the exposure and you want to be able to engage with individuals and you want your content to be seen. But then you also have your friends on the internet and you're like, oh, so they're scrolling Instagram like in the bathroom right now. And yeah. You know, I popped up. So basically, it's interesting. But yeah, I appreciate that. And really, you know, the biggest aspect there is kind of the gap or gray area that I see. And it's just, we see so many people on the internet trolling and arguing and confusing people even more about some of the basic principles that are out there. And it just leads to people jumping from like the bandwagon thing to the next bandwagon thing, to the next infomercial, to the next unsustainable, you know, approach. And it's really unfortunate. And so I understand that people are, you know, they're coaching, they're running businesses, but at the same time, you know, I think that can be really dangerous for a lot of people following and then, you know, create a lot of tension when in reality, everyone in the health, fitness, nutrition industry, you know, I think we have similar goals of trying to help people. So that was probably the most meaningful aspect of that compliment. And, it was cool because we hadn't connected in a while. So probably in 19 and then maybe a little bit in 2020. And I think, you know, right. You and Austin and Cody and I had chatted a little bit, but other than that, you know, it can be a little bit of a social desert sometimes in entrepreneurship. So it was always good to hear from guys like you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And to your sentiment, I think I actually wrote a small rant about this on my email newsletter, but I realized that there's a lot of content being pushed out there these days, especially on social media, but not a lot of things that are actually helpful. It's more so just kind of like shitting on certain things, or it's random like meme content whatever, but it's more so just a lot of people in these certain echo chambers furthering their confirmation bias. And then what ends up happening is that the people, you know, they end up with the same, views and beliefs on certain things and never actually change. And then all it's doing to the other side is just making them stick in their ground even further. And then what's ended up happening is that nobody is actually being helped.
Right. And the most dangerous part is you take that confirmation bias, which the truth is 95% of us, if we hear an argument or debate on the internet, we're going to default to whoever's side is most similar to our side, which is unfortunate. You kind of have to audit, you know, yourself and have a level of self-awareness around those conversations. But when you mix confirmation bias with the Dunning-Kruger effect of like new fitness and nutrition professionals who think they know everything and they're shouting in these echo chambers about things that they recently learned or what they think is the truth. And then you have other folks following them who are then seeking out this confirmation bias. It's this super dangerous place of less experienced individuals shouting from the mountaintop or the rooftop or whatever analogy you want to use. And it's just kind of this intersection of, you know, really we're talking about like social psychology, but kind of fascinating in how that bleeds into the health, fitness, and nutrition industry. And the lack of, you know, I think you and I, regardless of your belief system around certain approaches, it's like, we'd probably say it depends a lot of the time. Like,
right.
If you ask us, or if you ask Cody, or if you ask Austin, you know, we're probably going to ask a question to follow up on your question. So to give you an answer to your question, we're going to probably ask you like five questions. And that's really what I sort of look for. And it is difficult because as content creators, you have to create sticky content that, you know, people want to double tap, they want to share, they want to save, and they want to engage with, and it keeps them on the platform. But at the same time, you know, you don't just want like this gimmicky marketing material. Then when it comes time to actually try to pull people into a program, it's really, really challenging. So I agree. And I can certainly think of a few people where, you know, the memes or, you know, the sort of, they are trying to grow their building or, you know, get to the next floor by tearing someone else's building down. And I really hate that for our industry because, like I said, confuses the audience, but then also it makes us look like trash as far as professionals. Like we're not actually helping each other or finding common ground. Instead, we're taking that gray area and instead of viewing it as, well, here's some situations where your approach and my approach could work, you know, in harmony together, or here's where maybe your approach might be better, here's where mine might be better. Instead, we have this, you know, instead it's just like, you know, we're super divergent and there's no common ground. I'm right, you're wrong. You know, you're, you know, what you're doing is super unethical, whatever. And
I'm sorry to cut you off. You also have to, like, whenever you do take that stance repeatedly, you also have to, you kind of have to keep up the performance for the people who follow you. Because if you ever waver from something, like if you go back on what you were so, had so much conviction about at one point, you know, it's just like, if you keep that facade up, and if you keep up that type of content, you have to keep following through with that, or else the mob will kind of then kind of lose their trust in you. If you're not all kind of attacking this one point of view or something, and then you're like, oh, well, actually I was wrong. It's like, then people won't, I think eventually over time, won't be as engaged with your stuff.
Right. And to use an example, just for those of you following, if you're not quite in the same position as Matt or myself, it would be mm-hmm. the equivalent of if you watched a documentary on veganism or something, and then you were like full bore, 110%, like ride or die, this dietary approach, and you post everything about that, all your hashtags are related to that, all your followers come from that, it's going to be very hard to pivot and then say, oh, actually, but you can eat all this other stuff too, and take this balanced approach. It's really hard. And that's where having this polarity drives attention, and it's really good for marketing, but it's not so great for education. And that can be, it's so challenging to be an educator, but use what we know works in marketing and also educate at the same time. It's so difficult. So hopefully a lot of coaches can sort of relate to that position and that stance. And I'm glad you sort of took a moment to interject, because I think that was a valuable addition that, you know, not only is it an echo chamber, but then they don't deviate from that singular message in the echo chamber. And it creates not only redundant content, a redundant message, but then it's the audience expects that from them. And then there's always the next victim of the call out or the trolling. Or then when there's not a call out, the audience will literally go to other people's pages and tag, you know, the original poster, the original person who does the call out. And they're like, oh, what do you think of this? Like, is this trash? Like, you need to do a post, you need to do a video on this and like call these people out. And it's, I don't think that's super productive. And so it's interesting that we're starting the podcast with this, but it is a problem in our industry for sure.
No, absolutely. What I was wondering, this leads me into the type of content that you tend to put out. Cause you talk about some deep stuff. And I know that you probably get quite a few people that maybe disagree with some of the stuff that you're talking about. And I like how you said, whenever somebody asks us a question, we might follow that up with another question. With the type of stuff that you talk about and the really in-depth metabolism type things, do you ever get imposter syndrome? And two, do you ever get caught up in, this is kind of a deeper question, but we can, with our egos, as far as feeling like we're smart, right? And whenever we have somebody question certain things, like that can hurt us. So what I'm saying is, how do you stay open-minded with these very complex topics that you continuously talk about? If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think those are great questions. So I actually recently did a podcast on imposter syndrome. So I'll share some of my realizations and learning and some things I've heard that might be helpful for your audience, and I'll kind of condense it as well. So it's not super redundant if people want to go out and seek out that specific episode. But, you know, imposter syndrome is kind of like this backseat driver, or it kind of like rides shotgun. And instead of navigating and being helpful, it's like changing the radio station whenever you find a good song that you like. And it's, you know, criticizing, you know, your, when you put your turn signal on and when you want to pass and what speed you're driving. And so imposter syndrome can be, it feels, not only is it sort of critical of all of your actions, but it's, I think it can be really challenging, especially for coaches specific to the health, fitness, and nutrition industry. And so in the episode, I kind of talk about how, you know, imposter syndrome, you can let it shout, you can let it pout, but don't let it actually drive the car. So using that road trip analogy. And when we think about it, there's usually two routes to imposter syndrome. One is sort of this objective or analytical component of, I'm truly new at this. And that kind of almost goes back to that Dunning-Kruger example I had, which is interesting because when people are new, they actually have a higher level of perceived, you know, aptitude, or, you know, they're very confident, more so than they actually, like, their confidence exceeds their capabilities. And it's important, you know, imposter syndrome is almost the other side of when we were, you know, newer or just getting started in the industry, the reason we didn't feel as confident is from an objective perspective, we had less experience than someone else. So you can sort of address it and spearhead that objective component by seeking out more education. And two, you know, there's sort of this emotional judgment of self or questioning your validity as a person. Mm-hmm. And I sort of tie up that podcast episode and put a bow on it with the man in the arena quote of essentially, you know, at least if you're going to fail, you know, do so daring greatly. And, you know, the credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena. So I talk about, like, you know, the person, the human being who is actually coaching and getting clients results, right? As opposed to, you know, just, you know, what we're posting on Instagram. Because at the end of the day, the validity is in your, not, I wouldn't say limited to influence, but your impact on those other human beings. So that's kind of how I framed imposter syndrome recently. It's certainly something that earlier in my career, I think part of it came from, number one is just simply getting more experience. And number two is, I think we all sort of have that emotional root cause, especially depending on your, you know, upbringing, you know, your parents, your early relationships as an adult, your friendships, what kind of community you have around you. So just allowing yourself to step into that and then understanding that your actions, by daring greatly, by being the person in the arena, by opening yourself up to help people and getting additional education, you're addressing both components of imposter syndrome simply by getting the reps, you know, at what you need to do. It's just like, you're not going to be the best at squatting. I mean, granted, some people have certain biomechanical advantages, but to get better at squatting, everyone needs to squat. Or to get better at doing push-ups, you should probably do push-ups. To get better at playing guitar, you should play guitar. And coaching is a combination of that experience, but also acquired education, and also, you know, facing some of the topics that may be challenging or difficult for you, and seeking out coaching. And that's where, you know, with what I'm doing, I'm trying to encourage coaches to say, hey, it's okay to raise your hand and say, I want to be part of community. I want to have a good culture around me, a good environment. I would like to have a coach and continue to grow from there. So that's kind of the imposter syndrome component. What was the second part of the question? Was around the content that I share.
I have another question, because what was interesting about that answer is whenever you were talking, and it goes with the answer that you gave, is you were talking about, whenever you talked about squatting, you're like, some people are, or people aren't inherently good at squatting. And then you backtracked and you said, well, some people have certain biomechanics that allow them to, what I think, what the key there is, that you can tell that you're working through the problem and playing devil's advocate in your own head. And I think that's another great attribute of a lot of good coaches and just good thinkers in general, is that whenever you're saying something, you're actively kind of like trying to poke holes in your own argument, and you're kind of playing mental jujitsu. And I could see that in your answer, right?
Which almost creates more, if you're not confident in why you're poking holes in your own argument, it can almost feel like more imposter syndrome, when in fact it's just like critical thinking. Right. So there's a fine balance with all of these things, for sure. But thinking critically about that, or even, you know, a nutritional approach, I think it is important to sort of poke holes in the argument and philosophies. And that's why I shifted a lot of my content and even what I teach within the closed doors of my program more to, hey, here's some models, here are some frameworks, here are some methods, here are some strategies for thinking about problems, not here is the answer to the problem. Because I see a lot of people in, whether it's a nutritional certification and you get the piece of paper and you see, feel validated all of a sudden, you know, what a lot of people are teaching in their education is the textbook approach, or here's, you know, how the body works in a scenario where nothing is wrong, in a vacuum. So let's take it out of a vacuum, because most clients have challenges in their life or physiological challenges or internal, you know, basically to simplify that into internal health challenges. And how do we actually think about problems in terms of, you know, these frameworks, methods, models, and tools, as opposed to trying to get 50 people in a program to regurgitate what I would say because of how I would handle something. And maybe they want to tweak the method or tweak the model, tweak the framework, and sort of adopt their own strategy. And then, you know, the second part of your original question was around like sounding smart and, you know, where do we kind of find this balance of, you know, are we oversimplifying things to create this sort of widespread understanding, or are we still speaking at the level that the topic requires in order to be thoroughly understood? Or, you know, is it somewhere in between those, or does it need to be super in-depth? And what I notice is a lot of, and this is where I'm constantly trying to recalibrate, you know, my compass, I guess you could say, is finding sort of this true north that exists between the people who are in the weeds, minutia, like cellular level stuff that clients will never understand, and then the big picture, you know, oh, you should move more and maybe eat less,
right?
You know, on the complete other side of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And the truth is the answer probably lies somewhere in the middle. And so I try to not turn into human ping pong with content, but have a little bit of, hey, here's a reminder. This is your 10,000 foot view. You know, also here's the forest for the trees. But also, hey, like, check out that oak tree. Let's talk about the oak tree and like some of the attributes of that and what makes it different than other trees, or, you know, why this is particularly unique in this forest. So maybe that's me talking about thyroid or something, right? Or testosterone levels or women's cycle health. It's like, yes, it's still important. But if you go so far down that rabbit hole that you actually lose the fact that, you know, this is the entire forest that I'm in within whatever national park, something like that, you know, it can be really challenging. So
yeah,
it is something I struggle with quite frequently as a content creator, because I have people in my audience who follow me who are fairly advanced. And then I have people who are new, beginner to intermediate. And I'm not trying to scare them away, because I want them to hang out and learn and continue to participate and grow with me. So it is a challenge, but that's where I try to think about, how do I encourage these individuals and these coaches to think about these problems differently to arrive at better solutions through working with their clients, as opposed to solely, you know, this is the answer, this is what you have to do, or, you know, by, like I said, knocking down other people's buildings or trolling other people or saying there's only one way to do things, even though that might generate a bit more marketing attention initially. So that's like my current approach, but to be honest, man, it evolves regularly just in response to, you know, the audience that I'm interacting with and my own continued learning and trying to get better at this stuff and create better teaching models and tools and things that actually make sense, to which we could then apply personal preference to the framework to come up with the solution. So,
yeah. No, that makes complete sense. And I think you do a really good job of like kind of walking that tightrope, because I know exactly what you're talking about. It's kind of like sometimes you look through some content and you're just like, okay, what's the fucking point? Like what's the takeaway here? And I think that if you can bleed that marriage together with the kind of like high level stuff and then like the deep minutia stuff, and then kind of, or pick and choose, right? Whichever one you want to do, but still come away with some type of practical takeaway. I think that's huge. And this actually leads us to one of the things that we did talk about. And one of the things that you said, which I really liked, and you talked about how lasting change being a standard, not a goal. And I feel like that kind of ties into what you were talking about. So you mentioned that to me. Do you want to kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure, man. And I still, after you mentioned that initial question, I had like five more ideas about the original. So lasting change being a standard instead of a goal has been something I've been kind of riffing on for a while now, and just thinking about client transformation and thinking about coaches and thinking about evolution of business. And really, at the end of the day, you know, whether we're thinking about changing someone's physiology or otherwise, you know, we do have to get to a place where our current behaviors are basically a model or, you know, in alignment with that future person that we want to be, right? Mm-hmm. So a great question, and this works very well on strategy calls or in the outset of a client relationship, is there's sort of this like bridge, right? Of here's where you are currently, here's where you'd like to be. Let's close that gap together in the middle. But not only do I want you to buy in to the possibility of who that person is, or could be, and not only do I kind of want to ping the pain of where you are, but I'm also trying to figure out how do we become the person that has the goals that you outlined or the vision that you have for your life to then reverse engineer that to get there. And really then it just comes down to reverse engineering. And that same very high level 10,000 foot view approach that we're talking about, you know, whether we're figuring out how to get you to become a better business person, or whether we're trying to get you to be more fit for performance for a competition, or whether you just aesthetically want to be shredded or jacked, we need to take that same reverse engineering approach. And then, you know, we can then go into the specifics of metabolism, or we can go into the specifics of, you know, nutrition and, you know, physical fitness and training, and then come up with the approach of, all right, what is a day in the life look like for that person that you just told me has those things that you envy, that you crave, that you desire. And let's figure out, like, can you become that person? Do you want to be that person if this is what their day probably looks like? And then figuring out what's going to work for them, you know, which connects well to, you know, another topic that I've kind of been talking about is just in terms of, you know, it's setting expectations for the client relationship mm-hmm. kind of from the outset. So that's really what I've been referring to when I'm talking about those standards and trying to get clients to realize that, but also coaches as well, in terms of, you know, you want perceived expertise in an area or they're striving to become known for something, right? But they don't necessarily structure their day or their week or their month in alignment with the person they would need to be to, you know, arrive at that destination that they sort of listed.
Mm, okay. So then what would you tell that person that they need to analyze what they're currently doing and then maybe readjust the goal? Because sometimes people can think that they want to be one thing or want to do one thing. In actuality, their actions are saying something different, right? So do they have to do some type of like self-awareness and figure that out? Or kind of what would be the next steps to finding the true goal that they're kind of after?
Yeah, I think the first step is just that audit or self-assessment like you're talking about. I mean, think about nutrition. What do we do? Or at least my understanding, most nutrition coaches will start you with a food log, right? Mm-hmm. So 3 to 7 day food log, let's grab a couple weekdays. We know we need the weekend because if you're going crazy on the weekend, that's going to be throwing you out of a deficit, assuming this is a fat loss goal or something like that. So let's talk about, hey, what does your current life look like? And then what are some changes that we can actually make based on the current like status quo? It's all working right from that status quo. And then maybe progressively over time, we're going to get to that set of standards or, you know, that description that they had. But I don't think, you know, it's like overnight, we're just there at where we need to be. And that's where we end up in some of the more nuanced areas of coaching. But mm-hmm. I think the first part is, okay, you want to train for performance. Like, let's look at what your current training looks like. You want to lose fat or build muscle. Let's look at the nutrition and figure out how have you been behaving up until this point, you know, the last 60 to 90 days. And this is something I talk about with coaches a lot in more of a mentorship capacity, is this idea of like lagging feedback. A lot of times what you're experiencing right now is not because of what you did yesterday. It's 90 to 120 days ago or 3 to 6 months ago, the way that you were behaving and what you were doing and the momentum you were creating is what's showing up for you right now. So for, you know, a client in that nutrition context that I was sort of talking about, when we're going to change those standards, like, let's just start with an audit. Let's start with a food log. Let's establish what changes can be made to the current protocol and then kind of move from there. And then understanding that there might be some lagging feedback, how do we need to be today and tomorrow to then generate that long-term outcome 60, 90, 120 days from now, so that when we arrive there, we're not the same person that we were when we had this conversation initially. And I think that's one of the frustrating things about transformation, about change, is, you know, sometimes, you know, we miss out on this idea of lagging feedback. And there are things that we could be doing that are contributing to a greater goal, greater outcome down the road. And we're just sort of missing the boat on that right now. It's like when people realize, like, why do I have no leads right now? Or, you know, why did I stop losing fat today? When really it's a product of things they've been doing over time for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. Do you see it as important? This is something that I've been talking about with other coaches and consultants and things. As far as the importance, well, let's just take fat loss because that's probably the standard here. Being obsessive for certain periods of times. So like you said, having the food log, like maybe they've never had a food log before. Maybe they've never tracked that. They've never had that type of self-awareness. But if you track obsessively for whatever, 8 to 12 weeks or something like that, you're going to have a pretty good understanding of your day to day so that later on after that obsessive period is over, then you can maybe transition into something more sustainable. Right. So could you see that kind of like as, and this could be with your business as well. Like I feel like a lot of business people will have that kind of grind period. It's kind of like that rite of passage where you have to go through that grind period and then it kind of becomes exponential and then it becomes a little bit quote unquote easier, right? But you don't have to do that same type of grindy type stuff, right? Do you find that to be the case as well?
Yeah, I would describe that as kind of just seasons of life and business and fitness right. and nutrition. I think that happens all the time. You know, we think of it in training and nutrition, we talk about periodization, but the truth is in your life and in your business, you're probably going to face similar things and have to have similar phases, whether, you know, you like it or not. You know, I recently moved, probably going to influence my schedule, probably going to change, like, you know, what does, you know, good fitness and nutrition look like this week? Or how much work am I getting done on my business? And it can be frustrating and it can feel like pulling away from your norm and what you truly want to do. And I'm totally okay with those phases of being more disciplined and kind of diving in. I think sometimes that's necessary, but it probably depends on your previous threshold for, you know, that level of scrutiny. You know, someone who's maybe been an athlete before, or they've had to do serious cuts before, or it's not their first diet per se. I think it's going to be a little bit easier, but I do think there is that point where you sort of immerse yourself in whatever it is you're trying to master, whether that's health, fitness, nutrition, or otherwise. I think, but also part of that too is like, what is someone willing to sacrifice? So there's probably not one answer to that question, but if a client wanted to do that, I don't see a problem with being more disciplined for a period of time.
Well, what I think, that threshold. I'm sorry to cut you off. I do this sometimes, but what I'm saying is that I feel like a lot of fat loss coaches or fitness coaches, they talk about fat loss and these certain things, not in the seasonal aspect. It's more so just like people are constantly on a diet. Like you need to do it this way. You need to do it this way. And then this is where people can get caught up in being on quote unquote on a diet for the past forever. 5 years of their life. Right. But I think that not many people talk about this enough where like, it's like, hey, fat loss isn't supposed to be the goal forever, but it's not talked about like, okay, maybe for this next 12 weeks, we can go all in. We can be a little bit more obsessive and more disciplined with this goal. But then after those 12 weeks are over, what does that transition look like? And how do we just feel good on a regular basis? And this is something that I really wanted to touch on with you as far as just like, you know, whatever, call them lifestyle hacks or just stress management and just more so on the day-to-day basis, maybe after, because like the fat loss, you know, people beat that shit to death. And let's say we've gone through the fat loss phase. And then what would you kind of tell people that you maybe constantly see them fucking up over and over again? Just like, hey, get these things right. And then as long as you're not on a fat loss phase and you're just maybe on maintenance mode, like feeling good on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's great. The quality of life perspective is super important. So just to put that in a nutshell, so I refer to kind of the concept you're talking about as like the seasons of nutrition. So basically I view it as like three phases. Part of that time, we are putting stress on the body. Now, whether that's kind of this hormesis concept of, you know, applied tension, and we're trying to have specific adaptations to whatever stressors we're implying, whether that's reducing food or being more active, you know, whatever the case may be, we have planned phases of that. We also need to plan phases of either sort of maintenance or restoration or rebuilding or just taking a break. Now, a break doesn't mean you don't have to go to the gym at all, but maybe it's a deload, right? Or maybe it's a diet break or your calories are slightly higher. So I would say the biggest mistake that I see people making is just not having a seasonal approach. Now, if you are at maintenance all the time, there's probably less consequence to not having a seasonal approach. But like you said, so many people follow these accounts where it's diet all the time, calorie deficit all day long. And maybe the reason you're struggling to actually execute that diet appropriately is because you've been trying to do it all the time for the last 3 to 5 years. And you know, what changes in your life when we add a little bit of food and you're a little bit less stressed and you sleep a little bit more. And then all of a sudden you feel like going for that walk because you have the energy to do so. And then all of a sudden your training comes a little bit easier. And then you're setting some PRs because you're actually fueling performance in the gym. And then what happened? You built some muscle tissue. And then what happens next when we go to eat that next meal? Oh, now I'm actually like somewhat insulin sensitive. I'm under a little bit less stress and I'm applying the appropriate stimulus in the gym. This is a really powerful combination for essentially whether you want to argue recomposition or just, you know, favorable metabolic changes overall. You know, we've completely shifted this sort of hamster wheel paradigm that the diet industry operates on. And that's really, it's interesting that we've kind of gone full circle. I don't know whether you planned this intentionally or not in the great mind that is, you know, that appears on this podcast. But, you know, that's really a lot of what I'm trying to work on with a future project around metabolism is just understanding the seasonality, understanding why the diet industry operates the way it does, understanding that, hey, going to the grocery store is part of a sales and marketing experience. It's not just that every food there for you is good for you. And being able to make choices based on what's best for you by manipulating stress and energy, really those two main variables all day long. And that's, you know, I think to very, you know, simply answer your question, I think the biggest mistakes are people, you know, they're either only accounting for energy or only stress, or, you know, using the example of like someone who only thinks about hormones, right? Maybe they're only thinking about stress. People who only think about calories, maybe they're only thinking about energy. And then folks who totally lack this seasonality in their approach or understanding that, you know, maybe when I'm going on this vacation isn't the best time to try to execute this diet, or I'm going to have family in town, or you know, you have a newborn, right? Like a lot of what I would do with my guys when I was doing a lot more coaching, you know, one-on-one specifically, is a lot of them were in a similar phase of life. And it was like, they had maybe gotten married. It was before they were having kids. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, post whatever phase we were in, you know, now their fiance or wife or girlfriend is 6 months pregnant or whatever. So we've got T-minus 3 months until you have this ticking time bomb of some, you know, human screaming and crying and interrupting your sleep potentially. Right, and right. So we would, you know, I would usually plan that to be like the last diet phase before going either into maintenance or reverse, knowing that we're going to have more stress from less sleep. And maybe, you know, training needs to take a little bit of a backseat too during that phase. So I think the seasonality aspect is just planning for life. And also that inherently makes things more sustainable. And that example, that child rearing example is just sort of one example. Obviously everyone has sort of different life variables, but that's how you could plan to still move closer to your goals, but also have something that isn't in complete opposition of your real life right now.
Right. I think the seasonality aspect, that's a more macro example. I think we can even take this very micro. And this is something that some of my clients who come to me that are more type A, right? They're more type A. And sometimes you tell them, oh, think about it this way or think about it this way. It's like, that doesn't work for them. They need some type of framework, like decision-making framework. And so what I say, the reason why I brought this up was because one of my clients asked me, like, what qualifies as overeating if I'm going out to eat with some friends or something, right? Like, yeah, going out to enjoy myself or whatever. Like, is that still overeating or should I feel guilty about that? Should I not feel guilty about that? Like, my goals are fat loss. And so what I'm getting at here is with the seasonality of like, okay, maybe it's not the right time to focus on this or this. It's like, I even talk about it within a certain meal. It's like you talked about, what are you willing to sacrifice? What are you willing to trade off, right? Within that meal, what's the priority? Is it to enjoy the experience and just have more like a lifestyle meal, or is fat loss your highest priority in that moment? Like, I don't think there is any right or wrong answer, but whatever you choose, consciously choose as the priority in that moment, can make you feel like that, whatever you consciously choose, that's what you want to commit to. And that's what you want to follow through with. Right. So yeah. Do you, ever give advice like that, have you seen that pop up with the people that you work with?
So having a little bit more granular approach and breaking down the meal decisions, I think we do talk about this, but maybe in a slightly different sense, right? So I talk about like daily dietary decisions, right? You know, we want to align the meal decision with the phase that we're in. And that phase is based on a priority, based on whatever goals or standards that client set at that given time. So I do think that, it really does come down to your priorities in that moment. It comes down to a little bit of personal integrity and being able to have an honest conversation with yourself around, do I do this very frequently? And do I push my, you know, just so your client, you know, you mentioned like, how much is too much? Am I overeating? Am I having too many calories? If this is the client that's super type A and restrictive and probably never does that, the chances are they're probably still not going to blow it. Even if you say, hey, like go enjoy yourself, have a good time. But there's also the clients who are a little bit more laissez-faire with things. And maybe they're doing that at home already without going out to eat. Maybe they're already doing that. Oh, well, you know, the game's on this weekend. The guys are coming. Oh, well, after work, you know, I'm meeting up with Tim and we're going to hang out and, you know, do whatever. Or yeah, but my favorite band, like, you know, there's just constantly always this like next thing, right? So you have to, that level of honesty and integrity and getting to a place in your transformation where you're actually like, trust yourself, I think is very, very important. Because what I hear in that conversation about overeating is that client doesn't trust themselves to make an assessment on their own and have that determination of, was this meal appropriate or conducive to my goals? Mm-hmm. That's really what that conversation is. And then also being a coach, we're sort of serving as a mirror for the client to say, hey man, so you actually kind of already did this like 3 or 4 times in the last 10 days. I think we need to treat this as, why don't we go look up the menu ahead of time? What's something that still sounds good, but we know this kind of fits the protocol right now. Maybe still has some protein in it. Maybe you can get, you know, some veggies there. That's a different conversation. But I think a lot of times, you know, it's going to come back to what's the client's past behavior and have they sort of, I don't like using the word earned, but have they sort of established this relationship with themselves and with the food to have a little bit more creative freedom or creating their own adventure at that meal? More often than not, if clients are already doing that all the time, we probably have a lack of structure that's contributing towards maybe spinning our wheels on what we're working on. So I don't think structure is always a bad thing. I don't think discipline is always a bad thing. I think sometimes discipline can create freedom when you have it. But what it sounded like in the example you provided was a very disciplined client who is very structured, who maybe still needs to learn to trust themselves in those other scenarios to say, hey, I can go to this meal and you know what, tomorrow or 2 days from now or 5 days from now, I'm still on track, you know, for my goals. No, and that track is arbitrary.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. The type of person that's going to ask me that question in the first place is definitely like they're very rarely go off track, right? Like that it's that type of client who's usually crushing it, but they're so worried about like, I don't want to go off plan, but I don't know, is this okay? Is this not okay? So I've got to give them, hey, this is a way that you can look at it so that you can consciously have the autonomy to make that choice based off of kind of having flexible goals within that moment. However, like you said, if it's somebody who's constantly going back and doing this over and over again, and their progress is representative of that, well, then our job as a coach is to kind of like, hey, like, no, we got to be a coach. We got to be like, hey, dude, sorry. Like you've been dicking around way too much. And now it's time that you're going to have to show a little bit more restraint.
Yeah. Firm, but still fair.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so. I think so. Exactly. Well, cool, man. What about you've been doing the podcast. I want to get into, cause the thing is like, I was looking through some of your content and stuff and it's all, amazing. Like the content is wonderful. It's educational and stuff, but I want to know like, how have you been enjoying the podcast? And you said that you moved recently. Give me a little bit. I know we're doing the podcast kind of backwards here, but I did want to kind of get into the life of Sam Miller here and see how things are going. Like what's the main stuff that you're kind of focused on right now and kind of excited about? Just kind of fill us in on that and what your kind of end goal is with it.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, my week right now is kind of structured around my 12-week program for coaches, which is a live program We have just over 50 health, fitness, nutrition professionals in that program right now. And that's sort of my baby, if you will, or like the flagship program per se. Around that, it's just structuring a lot of content, communication, and material that can be of value to, you know, whether you're someone I just met, you know, 5 minutes ago, or someone that's been following me for five, you know, weeks, 5 months, 5 years. And the podcast kind of fits there in my content ecosystem. Currently podcasting.
I'm sorry again for cutting you off, but I want to know, like, why did you, you said that that's kind of my baby. Like, why was that important to you? Why did you feel that that was needed in our industry? What was kind of the thinking behind that?
So I'd like to pretend I had some sort of like master plan for it from the beginning, but honestly, I got to a point in my one-on-one coaching where I had a lot of coaches who were hiring me for coaching and then also asking questions about their clients and then also taking or creatively borrowing some things that I would use or ways that I would do things and then apply it to their clients. Now, so part of it was out of necessity. And then part of it was I think based on some of my personal experiences in health, fitness, and nutrition industry, probably, you know, also like my mom was an educator. So having a little bit of that, not quote unquote in my blood, but like raised in that environment, but also having the entrepreneurial side of wanting to support these individuals who are, you know, going out and serving others through health, fitness, nutrition. I talk about the ripple effect a lot. And so the podcast and this program are some of the best ways to sort of accomplish that. So if I had 50 nutrition clients, I'm making less of an impact. Now, you could argue I'm having a profound impact in 50 lives of those individuals. However, if I help 50 coaches who have 50 clients, we've just sort of flipped that on its head in terms of the magnitude of the number of individuals that are receiving education or having some sort of change in their life as a result of that teaching. So really to play at a larger scale of getting my philosophies, my methodologies, my approaches out there, it had to move, you know, it would not have been, you know, from a time perspective, it would have been impossible to reach that same number of people without that multiplier effect. And so that's what I talk about, you know, when I talk about sort of the ripple effect of coaching and what I do with that content. So when I say it's my baby, it's more so one, a lot of my work and the way that I've sort of accumulated information, you know, over the last decade and beyond, and then the way I've tried to distill that down to make it different from the way that other people teach it, it pretty much exists, is the lifeblood of that program. And then, I think it's something that I'm more known for and, something that I try to do well. So that's why I sort of referred to it in the way that I did. Mm-hmm. And then the podcast is just, you know, three times a week right now, mostly solo episodes and some featured replays. Probably we'll throw this one on there just because it's a different topic than what we normally talk about. And I kind of like that, getting a different look. You know, I love educating about whether it's women's health, thyroid, whatever, but it's probably, you know, that's like 90% of the questions sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's cool that people realize I have other qualities, you know, other than, you know, understanding the menstrual cycle. So it's always appreciated when, you know, even this more like philosophical dialogue is cool too. So that's really, you know, the crux of, you know, my weekly structure, and then things are built around that. So whether that's other content, you know, community, clients, and then running a business. So that's really kind of the biggest thing for me right now. And then I'm trying to get back into writing more, which is something I did a lot more in like 2018, 2019, in working on some ebooks and things at that point in time. So that was like 2 years ago. And now trying to take some of my more recent approaches and create something that's accessible to people that's not necessarily only in like a high level mentorship program, and being able to once again kind of tie it back to sort of that ripple effect concept, but having ways that this information is accessible, it's usable, it's distilling what's out there. You know, we are in sort of this information age where you can Google pretty much anything, but you'll find seven different conflicting opinions and then more people arguing on the internet and then stuff to support your confirmation bias. So I'm trying to help people think about metabolism, think about nutrition, think about training, think about movement differently, and empower them to sort of have this operating system or framework to be able to do this for decades, as opposed to just like a number of days of, oh, I did Jenny's juice cleanse and, right, you know, well, I'm right back where I started. So that's really the goal. That's kind of what I'm up to and things that are on the horizon.
Cool. What are some, as far as improving your own operating system, what are some ways, like, do you learn best through books, through mentors, through deep reflective periods, right? Working through problems. Like how would you improve your own mental model and decision-making process?
So I'm definitely a big fan of audio. Not that I don't learn by reading. I mean, there's phases where I go through it. I do a lot of reading. Especially early on with health, fitness, and nutrition, I pretty much always had a coach for a very long period of time. But I think coaching is relative, right? Like if you are a coach and a business owner, maybe right now you need a financial coach, right? It doesn't always have to be a fitness coach, and growth and development can look very differently. Or maybe you're going to counseling. Maybe you have a therapist that you talk to. I think that's all. I think as long as the goal is development and you're trying to improve yourself, like we should commend each other for doing that. It's not always going to look the same for everybody. So coaching for sure, I would say on a variety of different topics, podcasts, books, although, or audiobooks, and, you know, videos and things like that, if I can. I do think, you know, as you go further down certain rabbit holes, there's not always that there's more to learn, but there's different ways that other people might teach a topic, or you look back on how you're currently teaching something, or maybe your own sort of education that's out there, and how do I make this better? And I think 2021 for me has been a lot. I've been asking that question a little bit more of, how do I improve this? How do I make this better? Instead of seeking out more information or more programs, it's doubling down on some of the things that have worked well. 2019 and 2020 were very interesting. 2019 was kind of a big shift for me. 2020 obviously was an interesting year for everyone. But one thing that I did is I just simplified everything. So less offers, less programs, less distraction, you know, getting sort of very clear on some core stuff before branching out from there. And that really paid dividends in terms of being able to help other people, but then also, you know, in terms of from growing as a business owner, I think that made a big difference as well. So, which on paper would seem like, quote unquote, doing less, you know, or taking a step back, or like taking, you know, one step back to take two steps forward. But I think, you know, based on your question, those are the things that kind of come to mind the most. So learning wise, yeah, that's really all that's there right now. Probably a mix of audio and a lot of just like you said, kind of poke holes in some of the stuff that you're already doing or that you previously did and figure out, like, is there a way to make it better? It's kind of like,
right,
you know, if you had Legos, like knock it down and reassemble it. Like, can you build it a different way? Can you make it a little bit better? Mm-hmm. And that's been a big thing. And then also trying to have a little bit more team around me. So by the time this podcast goes live, we'll have some changes in terms of team structure and supporting, you know, characters, if you will, supporting staff, to help sort of continue all the things that we talked about today. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's different for me too, since, you know, I've gone through phases of doing that, but, you know, trying to do it differently this time in sort of the reassembly process, as I mentioned. So that's probably, you know, top things based on that question. But if I missed anything,
No, that's good. Are you having fun? Are you enjoying yourself?
Yeah. So I think this is a seasons thing, right? So I think there's seasons where a little bit more fun, seasons a little bit more serious, a little bit more building. It is tough. I think just being honest with like my personality type, I tend to fall into things like responsibility, right? And like serious stuff and education and learning and personal development. And it is hard to sometimes take a step back, have fun, you know, just seek that or cultivate that or make a choice, like, you know, I'm going to focus on joy today as opposed to right. some of those other things. And those energetics can get lost a little bit sometimes in this, in like you said, whether it's the highly disciplined phase or the highly structured phase, or, you know, that type A kind of burn the candle at both ends. And so that's, you know, something I need to work on. I think, you know, I have aspects of my routine that include that, or aspects of my life that include that. But I think we could all do a better job of, like, within, you know, the goals that we're seeking and the things that we're doing, like having, you know, some form of play, or this makes me joyful, or I enjoy music, or I enjoy, you know, for me, it's like my dog and music and friends and social interaction, and not having, like, I almost said like buyer's remorse, but like remorse for participation in that when taking a little bit of a break from some of your goals and sort of that grinding all the time. And that's one of the reasons why this team aspect is important, is to have the time to have fun and have the time to step away and have the time to connect with people. So that's, you know, in progress, but I'm sure it is for a lot of people. So
yeah, well, it's part of the, I feel like the coaching journey with things, right? Speaking of, well, you mentioned James Clear whenever we chatted last, but he was talking about how much of an impact he literally took out a notebook each morning for like 2 weeks. And then at the very top, and he put like, what do I really want? And then just kind of like listed things. And I think that we don't do that often enough, especially as business owners and things, or everybody, actually. You can just get caught up in the day-to-day life and the next to-do list and the next thing and the next thing. And it's just like, what's the end goal here? Like, what is this all for? What are the main things that we do really want? And then kind of realize, like you said, maybe I can do, yes, I'm doing less, but it's actually getting me closer to the goal than otherwise. Right.
Yeah. I think that's totally true. I like the question. And last time, I think we talked about like morning routines and writing and things like that. I think focusing on what you want is important. And, you know, I definitely, so 2019, 2020, from a business perspective, I really had to take a step back and say, like, how do I want to build this? Yeah. And not just, I'm not just building this because other people built it this way, because that's certainly not the case. If anything, went in a very different direction. And it is important to have that introspection and that moment of clarity, and not necessarily falling into, whether it's for business or fitness or otherwise, the keeping up with the Joneses of, well, so-and-so is doing this, so like I need to do this to be happy.
Right.
And that's, you know, I think that's important to sort of audit yourself and realize that. So, I do like that question though. Just sort of thinking of like, what do I want to do, you know, or how do I want to go about this? Because especially in a coaching role, whether fitness, nutrition, or otherwise, or business, or mentorship in any capacity, a lot of times you are thinking about how to, like we said, bridge, you know, where people are and their desires and their wants and their needs. And we're focusing so much on what those people want. And not that there's anything wrong with that and having that as a profession. I think it's cool. And you get to be a part of a lot of transformation. But in doing so, a lot of times you're thinking about what other humans want, and not necessarily like what Matt wants or what Sam wants or, you know, what Sally wants. So I think that's key, is an awareness of that. And then what are you going to do about it to actually make sure that you still do think about your wants and needs at times?
Yeah. Or you're thinking about what you want and you see somebody else that got what you want from a different path, and you think you need to take that path, but it's actually going to end up making you miserable whenever you get there and reach that destination. And then you kind of have to work backwards, right?
Yeah. The comparison syndrome almost, yes. You're like, you have to be on that path. Yeah.
Right. Well, cool. I do want to be respectful of your time, and I have one last question, but before that, where can people find out more about you and your work and your programs?
Sure. So I'm Samler Science on everything. So Instagram, podcast is Samler Science, and my website is samlerscience.com. I do have a community for coaches called the Nutrition Coaching Collaborative. We got about 2,000 or so folks in there, which is a good place to hang out if you're seeking, you know, a different culture, community, and other coaches that are also kind of in the trenches working with clients and trying to help people. So I spend, the best place is probably like I hang out on Instagram quite a bit. And then the podcast may have little name stuff coming down the horizon. But in the meantime, well, I'm sure whatever Matt puts in the show notes is good enough for me for now.
I got you covered. I got you covered. Well, cool. So the last question, well, first off, definitely everybody go check Sam out. He's amazing, as you guys can tell from this convo. Last question is just, what should people do next? What would you recommend after listening to this podcast? Give it a thought for a second. What should people do next?
Out of anything we talked today, is there a topic that you're most, okay.
It could be anything, man. They can go walk their dog, go call their mom. It could be whatever. What do you think?
Walk your dog one.
Walk your dog. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, or go. Yeah. It's like, go walk your dog, go rescue dog, go give a belly rub, preferably to a dog, not another human that you don't know.
Yeah, good tip.
I do think, you know, what we were talking about earlier with kind of that curse of knowledge and imposter syndrome topic earlier, you know, in that internal dialogue with yourself, being honest, but also assessing areas for improvement, but also giving yourself a little bit of credit for where you are in your journey. I think that's really important. Mm. And there's this sort of interesting intersection there. But most of all, and this was in my profile for like 3 years, and Matt and I have talked about this a lot in a number of different capacities over the last 2 or 3 years as well. It's just like, don't be a dick about it. And that's that really, I'm going to totally ditch what I was just saying about imposter syndrome and the curse of knowledge. And when you show up online, if you're a coach, if you're an educator, if you're trying to help people, like, don't, you know, you don't need to like engage in a fight to show, you know, your superiority necessarily, or to drag other people down. I think if someone is putting out questionable information, like, maybe try to create an educational post that shows the other side of it without necessarily this ad hominem attack at this other person. Mm-hmm. Instead, using your content to sort of speak a little bit louder in that sense. So I think we all have sort of this instant internet access at our fingertips at all times. We're all scrolling, you know, ferociously is what it seems like. And it can be very easy to have some of these like surface level judgments and stuff as well. And so I would just encourage you, like, come from a place of, you know, trying to help people and, you know, looking at, okay, if maybe this was not the correct information, I don't agree with this person. Do you need to attack that person? Or do you need to just stay to your true north and figure out, how can I educate my audience to maybe compensate for the fact that I don't agree with that approach? And here's why, or here's the gap that's being missed, or here's a point that's being missed. But I think a lot of people, it's a lot of vying for attention through tearing other people down. And I even felt bad the other day. I realized I did like a commentary on a TikTok video. I didn't mention anyone or say anything derogatory. I was just like, here's what I would do differently. But I even was like, oh shit, am I like doing what I tell people not to do? And so even trying to kind of like reframe that and think like, okay, how do I educate in a way that's putting some good out there and making people aware of certain biases? And then also figuring out, hey, what works best for you right now may not be what works best for you 5 years from now or 10 years from now, and going from there. So a bunch of different things in that little segment, but what should people do? I think, you know, be mindful of how you're showing up, especially online. And if you are a coach or someone with any type of authority or influence, just try to do it in a way that doesn't sort of create this paralysis for people. And just, you know, there's a little bit of empowerment with that comes with that education. So I think that's going to be my little sign off for today.
There you go. You don't need to be a dick about it. I think
need to be a dick about it. That was the bottom of my Instagram profile for
long time,
probably 2 or 3 years, I think. So
yeah, absolutely. I love it. Yep. All right. Beautiful. Sam, thank you so much for joining me. Hopefully we can do it again soon, dude.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
And that is that, my friends. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the More Than Fitness podcast. And please, if you could help me out a little bit here and leave a rate and review in iTunes, and also take a screenshot and post it up on your IG story. Tag me at MattMcLeod6. I'd love to share it. I'd love to connect with you. I'd love to hear your feedback about the podcast, and also so that we can share the word with other people. I would love to build up this community, build up this tribe of people that we have like you and I, and get the word out there. Also, if you want more free content, you can check the links in the description. I have my free 4-week workout plan, The Ultimate Physique Development. And also, if you want to work with me online, one-on-one for personal coaching, you can check the link in the description as well.
And anything else you need, please send me an email, send me a DM. I would love to hear from you. Again, thank you so much for listening.